The Dave Damaschek Football Program. Available on Apple Podcasts and at NFL.com/DDFP. Now here's your host, Dave Damaschek.
Oh yeah, this is going to be a good one. Hi and hello, football fans, Game of Life fans, and I hope movie and TV fans are listening right now. I hope all's well wherever you are here in Studio 66. We'll talk some football, but the other subjects that I just broached will certainly be a focus point as well. We're very excited because we have an old pal of ours behind the glass right next to a newer pal. Well, now he's getting to be old himself there, and there's more of him to love than ever before the heavy set Eddie Spaghetti. Are you excited today or what?
This is going to be a really fun one.
You think this will
be
good?
Yeah.
Okay, because here in Studio 66 with me, seated to my immediate left, a Super Bowl champion, but he has really sort of transcended being a pro football player merely. He won the Super Bowl, the second Giants victory over the Patriots a few years back. Since then, he's gone on to great acclaim as a writer. How about that? In show business, a lot of people want to do it. Spencer Paysinger has done it. And so tell me about this, first of all, before I even say hello to you. On the CW, the show is coming up with a second season in October 7th, to be exact, All-American. It's basically the biography of your life, right?
Yeah. It's loosely based on my life growing up in South Central Los Angeles, but having an opportunity to attend Beverly Hills High School.
And I've seen some of it. I watched the pilot, as a matter of fact, is what I've seen. And take no, wait, you didn't watch the second episode? You must not have been that impressed. The thing is, see, it's football season, and then I have four children. And so consuming any series is difficult for me. But
it's streaming. Like, get to it when you want.
All right, okay, that's right. That's what I'm going
to do.
That's what I'm going to do. And then also, you're the star, you're the host of a brand new podcast.
Yes.
So track it down on iTunes under the heading WRTS, right? That's how you call it. And I like the name of this show. Pretty clean. I can't believe no one's thought of this before. Film Study Podcast. It's all about movies and TV and your new life, huh?
So just like you said, it's on WRTS. That's our podcast channel presented by Uninterrupted. And myself and my producing partner, Dane Mork, we host the Film Study Podcast. So essentially we're breaking down films akin to the film study name. As a player, when we're watching film, we're trying to get keys to, you know, our opponent. And after we play the game, we're trying to learn from our mistakes. So that's what we're doing each week with films that are coming out and films that we just watched. Is the film that's coming out, we're giving you those little tidbits that you like to talk about going into the theater. For example, Aladdin was modeled after Michael J. Fox, Marty McFly. And then after the initial renderings, they found out that he was a little too dopey. So they went to who? Tom Cruise in Top Gun and a Calvin Klein model somehow. After all that came to fruition, they looked to Han Solo, Harrison Ford, and said, this is where we want to get our personality from. So those three characters essentially made up Aladdin. So that's some of the things that we're talking about in the film, is just, you know, kind of digging through the archives and finding those cool, interesting topics around the movies that we've watched and the movies that we are soon to watch.
Well, consider my interest peaked further to go back and watch that in my house right now. Yeah. Also consuming my time. I mentioned football. I watch some of that, but in my house, we watch a lot of animated stuff.
Yes.
It's weird. I don't think I've ever seen full animated Aladdin. I've seen pretty much every animated or Disney princess picture, but not that one.
I have a 2-year-old and one on the way, so I'm knee deep in the animated world.
Maybe we can jump in on some of that. I want to hear more about that. But again, Film Study Podcast presented by Uninterrupted. It's and track it down. WRTS is how you'll track down.
Yes.
It's basically a network of podcasts. And Uninterrupted, I am getting deja vu because two of my favorite guys who now both work at NFL Media, one is Andrew Hawkins, the other is Joe Thomas, two lovely fellas. And I seem to recall that a guy who helped bring that whole thing together and brought this show to us today used to produce one Dave Damaschek football program. That's right, everybody. He's back, seated behind the glass in his old chair. It's Black Tie.
What is going on, Shaq? Glad to be back at Studio 6, Maximum Strength. I'm mad you let that down.
Oh, I forgot about maximum strength. I just got a cold chill up my spine. I know that much. Black tie behind the glass. Talk about transcending your old job in football and moving on to even greater heights. We're very pleased that Black Tie is blowing up over there and uninterrupted, and excited to chop up some movie and TV stuff with you. How are you, Black Tie?
I'm doing good. As you mentioned, you know, film study is a blast to work on. Uninterrupted is great. I keep up with the DDFP family. Where's Emma, by the way? Emma VP. What happened?
She passed away. No. She's now working on Jeselnik, another successful graduate of Studio 66.
I know. Good times. But I'm glad to be back, you know, getting ready for the NFL season and to talk movies.
All right. Yeah. I want to talk movies.
I love movies.
And now listen, Spencer, I don't know if you've bought his jive, but inside 66, you'll see there quite clearly our cardinal rule, our only rule, no jive. We don't jive each other. Yeah. Black Tie tried to get away with jive talk for a while. Mm. I'm a cinephile. I love movies. Except have you figured out yet the little asterisks, the plentiful asterisks?
There's a lot.
He doesn't like anything mid-90s.
Sports movies in general.
Doesn't like sports movies, which is a weird, again, working at the NFL, then at Uninterrupted, doesn't like sports movies.
Exactly.
Doesn't like Tom Cruise movies.
Which is like he's been our action hero for the better part of 30 years.
He's in roughly half of the movies that have come out in your lifetime, so that eliminates all those. Doesn't really like a lot of you don't like Mel Gibson movies, right? Really, you like the scores. Basically, that's what you like for movies.
Mel Gibson, that's been valid for the past 10 years. But before that,
I thought we canceled Mel Gibson.
It's morally acceptable to now turn your nose up at Mel Gibson movies.
Exactly.
But there was a stretch there where we didn't know anything about that, and they were generally pretty entertaining. Now, here's the other thing, Spencer, you should know. His replacement, Eddie Spaghetti back there, similarly likes to think he knows a lot about TV and movies. Mm-hmm. But has never seen either Die Hard or Lethal Weapon. What do you think of that?
Well, now I'm looking at you. Who's hiring these people then?
You're right. I'm the common thread. At some point, I have to blame myself for this. What do you think of that, Black Tie?
I have not seen Lethal Weapon neither. So
you've never seen Lethal Weapon?
And I have seen Die Hard. I just don't remember it much. I did want to go back and watch it. Because I watched The Siege this weekend, and I was like, you know what? I need to watch some more Bruce Willis movies.
You understand that you're on a movie podcast,
I do understand that. When we talk current movies.
You get no better than 90s action. 90s action.
I think that's kind of true.
90s R&B. I prefer a lot 90s R&B.
They're together. Yeah. 90s anything is like the peak, especially with action movies. You have to watch them.
You're exactly right, because that's the sweet spot. That's Schwarzenegger at the height of his powers.
Exactly.
That's, you know, the Lethal Weapon. The first couple or few were good. If we can, I don't know if you would call them properly action movies, but that's when the Star Wars movies are finishing up there.
That's also
Raiders of the Lost Ark.
That's also the saxophone. You know, the saxophone solos? Like, that's when you know you're in peak 90 action, when you get that saxophone solo.
Danger. Yeah. Even our top comedians of the day were doing action movies. Eddie Murphy was in 48 Hours. So when you look back at that, that's kind of a weird movie. Like hardcore gunplay wrapped around some jokes. Yeah. It's a weird genre.
It is. It's gritty, but he's just in there just being a delight. So I'd watch 48 Hours anytime.
It's a gem. Yeah. It's a real gem. Let's talk about, because we are on NFL ground here. So let's just talk very quickly some pro football stuff, and specifically that second Super Bowl. Obviously, your one against Tom Brady and company.
Yes.
And what do you recall from that run and from that week or so that ran up to taking on the dynasty of the 21st century?
Yeah, I mean, one of my just most vivid memories of that is before we even left to go to Indianapolis, you know, Justin Tuck, Eli, those guys that ran our locker room, they got up in front of us in our meeting room and said, listen, we're cutting curfew at 11 o'clock. We don't need to get there and have the whole, at 1 o'clock is curfew, then we take it down. It was 11 o'clock every single night because they said, you want to party as a champion. You don't want to party before and then have a chance to party afterwards. We're locking everything down. Curfew at 11 for the entire week. And for me, it was great because I didn't go out anyways. We went to dinner. I think we got chased by a mob in Indianapolis. But just in terms of that entire run, it was so great because I feel like we had what I call the definition of a perfect season. To me, a perfect season is not 16-0. It's not 18-0. It's not that. It's starting off hot, which we did. I think we were at 6-2 going into our bye week. And then what we call now infamously is no-win November. I think we dropped 6 of the next 8 games, I want to say. And by week 13, it was win or go home. That's when Victor Cruz was coming on. That was Victor Cruz's coming out year. But by that week 13 and it being win or go home, we were in high gear. So going into the playoffs, you know, holding Atlanta to a safety, I believe, going into Green Bay.
Oh, I remember that game so well.
Getting that one. And to this day, the NFC Championship against the San Francisco 49ers is one of the hardest fought games I've ever played. And I was mainly a special team in my rookie year. So just to me, it was a storybook season because we went to the highs, went down to the depths, and then redeemed ourselves with a Super Bowl trophy.
Well, yeah, I mean, and by the way, convenient to go back, the 11 o'clock curfew would be put into place in Indianapolis. Like, hey, what are we doing at midnight anyway?
Exactly.
What are we doing around
here? Can't do too much in Indianapolis past 10 o'clock at that.
Go get, what's the good shake place? Not Shake Shack, but there's
Steak
a,
and Shake.
Steak and Shake. That place is good. I went to college an hour south of there.
Oh, so there we go. You know all about it.
Yeah, I know a little bit about that area. But yeah, I was in the stands that night and could not believe what I was watching. Eli's going to do it again. He's going to beat Tom Brady again. No one else can beat Tom Brady, but Eli Manning's the guy who can do it.
At the time, no. Going into that last play, I remember I was standing next to one of my linebacker friends. I'm spacing on his name right now, and I apologize, Greg, his last name. But I looked to him and I said, listen, if that side celebrates after this ball is thrown, we just lost. But if our side celebrates, we just won. I wasn't even looking at the field. So we're literally looking at each other, holding each other like, please, God, please. Our side celebrated, and we ran onto the field crying.
Oh, I can't imagine. That would have been the worst. If you were ever to lose a Super Bowl on a Hail Mary, that would just I can't imagine how disgusting that would be. But it didn't go that way.
Well, for context, that year before, I lost in a national championship to Cam Newton on a field goal. So to me, it's another redeeming story because within 12 months, I lost a national championship, but I ended up winning a Super Bowl. So it kind of all evens out for
that.
Me.
You know what? That is a weird national championship because what I remember from that game is on the final drive, I don't remember who was the running back.
Michael Dyer
goes down, but everybody on the Ducks thinks his knee hit, and he spins back up and he's running down the field, and that's what got them in the field goal range, right?
See, his wrist and forearm hit the ground, and Eddie Pleasant, a safety, he's still in the league. Shout out to Eddie Pleasant. His forearm hit the ground when he got tackled, and he scampered for another 40 or 50 yards, but there was a similar play to that the day before against, I want to say, Ohio State, Arkansas. The same exact play, and it called him down. Hmm. But after the scamper of 50 yards, we were sure that the refs were going to get it right. Didn't get it right. 2 plays later, I believe, they kicked a field goal, and I remember not even seeing the ball go through. I just walked off the field.
Hmm.
That's how I ended my college career.
I've never been to Autzen Stadium, but everybody sings songs about how intimidating it is. They just put out a list I saw somewhere online that ranked the best college atmospheres and everything.
Yes.
Oregon was not on it, I don't think. Did you happen to see that one, Spaghetti?
I did, but I don't think they were ranked.
I don't think
high.
They were either. But does it live up to the hype? Have you been in other places that are like that?
Absolutely. I played in some of the best stadiums in the country, and I would say Autzen Stadium stands up to all of them. Per seat, I think we have at least 20,000 less seats than some of the better stadiums out there. But in terms of volume, you can't compare.
It's weird how that works. I guess you're more on top of them in the smaller joints like that. But I've been in some real little barns for college basketball games.
Yeah.
It's so loud in those places. What's the most intimidating atmosphere in the NFL?
The most intimidating, I would say, easily Seattle.
Yep.
Just the architecture, it really just concaves down onto you. Those fans are right there. And there are times where you're standing there, for myself being a special teamer, being on that front line, seeing the rabid fans, seeing the players jumping around, it gets intimidating if you're not prepared.
Last thing for you with your playing career, you crossed over for a season with Odell Beckham. Is that right?
Yes.
I mean, I don't know how fair it is at this point in his career, but nevertheless, I must ask you about perhaps the biggest star in pro football. What were your thoughts about Odell?
I have absolutely nothing bad to say about Odell, but everything good. He's a guy that he's worked as hard as anybody, if not harder. He'll give you the shirt off of his back if need be. He's genuinely a nice guy, you know. And definitely in the media, they try to paint him as this, you know, this head case, this locker room problem. But in my limited experience with him, I never had that. He's somebody that he comes to work, he does his job, but he's really good at doing his job. So it's just getting him the pieces that can allow him to do his job effectively. That's one thing when it comes to being a receiver, is your job is so reliable on somebody else getting you the ball and the program kind of catering to you, that you're kind of at the beck and call of somebody else. As a linebacker, I can just tackle people or sack people, get an interception. So it's not really relied on somebody else helping me achieve. But to me, he's a great guy.
It's funny because the media and the world at large has to choose, at least. Mm-hmm. Do you, because the media bellyaches about guys that don't work hard enough and don't care enough.
Yeah.
And then at the same time, in maybe even the same conversation, there's bellyaching about Odell throwing fits and this guy is upset. Yeah. Well, which one do you want? Do you want them to, I'll take the guys who care, who are perceived to care too much, than the guys who care too little.
It's passion.
Yeah, that's passion. All.
You
would think you would want
that. You can't coach that. So when you have a player that exudes that and can perform on the field, he's one of the best in the game, if not the best receiver in the game. When he can't get his touches, like, that's his productivity. He wants to be better for the team. And when that doesn't happen, like, he has to be vocal about it, because at the end of the day, he's somebody that just wants to win football games, because it helps him, it helps his team, it helps the city he's playing for. So I have nothing bad to say.
Yeah, you want people who want the ball, and Michael Jordan is a guy who was like that. And that leads me to this. You guys on your show recently did a fictional.
Yes.
Basketball player draft. Who was the first overall pick there?
It was Neon Bordeaux. Neon Bordeaux from, oh my God. I'm still kind of livid at that, because he was my first pick from Blue Chip, Shaquille O'Neal. Mm-hmm. Just an unstoppable force. That's, you know.
I always liked.
You can't step away from Neon as number one pick.
When Bob Knight / Nick Nolte finds him down in the bayou playing in the raggedy gym, it's interesting that it has breakaway rims. Yeah. I always like that. You would think that check the reality of that. But yes, I like, that's a very strong one. Can you go intergalactic draft picks allowed?
So here are the stipulations.
I mean, you know.
The stipulations were there couldn't be ghosts, there couldn't be cartoon characters, and the person that you're picking, it was only based on how they performed in that movie. So, you know,
it's nonsense when people want to, you're not playing ball, you're not in the spirit of the conversation. If you're saying, well, I'll take Calbert Chaney from Indiana, even though he's not Calbert Chaney in the movie. He's,
like Kevin Durant in Thunderstruck, like, wasn't the best basketball player in that movie. So if you're picking what you think to be Kevin Durant, like, you're
picking the character.
You're picking the character.
Jesus Shuttleworth is who you're drafting. You're not drafting. Ray Allen. Exactly. Thank you. Where, you know, would be a nice 1-2 punch, and I'm sure you could do a little better than this, but I got to say, you got Shaq taking up space in the blocks down there, and he can pitch it back out to Jimmy Chitwood.
Yeah. Limitless range. I want to say Zach might have picked Jimmy, but I'm not sure. I gotta look it up.
Wait a second. Chitwood better have gone somewhere black tie, didn't he?
I think he got somewhere.
You never saw Hoosiers, right?
I
got to
look at the draft board. I was only worried about my guys.
Yeah, I was checked out on this segment. Like, I don't do sports movies. I'm sorry. Moving on.
Producer of a sports podcast, guys. There he is.
It's a film podcast.
It's very strange.
With a sports
spin. Oh, it has sports DNA.
Yeah.
Spaghetti, who would you be drafting in that?
Probably Bill Murray in Space Jam. That's like the best I could do.
My number one pick, because I picked second, but my number one pick was actually Shep from Above the Rim. Because I likened him. He's Kawhi. He's basketball movie Kawhi, unflappable. He thinks he took part in killing one of his best friends, and from that point on, he was out of the game, but they brought him into it. He literally almost got, he did get shot at the end of the movie, but that's my MVP. That's my number one pick. That's who I'm building a franchise with.
Could you go Hoop Dreams? I guess you probably wouldn't want Willie Gates or Arthur Agee.
Well, also,
some
it wasn't,
of the talent out there.
I think one of the other restrictions was it couldn't be
based on a true story. Yeah,
that's fair.
We had some restrictions. We had some restrictions.
Could you
still one though?
Did anybody take? I'm embarrassed. You already mentioned him once. Michael J. Fox. Did anybody take Teen Wolf? Scott.
I did.
You did. Huh?
I did, because I saw Neon get taken off the board. So I said, listen, there's nobody out there that can actually pretty much banged the rim with Neon. Mm-hmm. So I need somebody to go over him. And who has like a 15-foot vert? Teen Wolf.
That's right.
So there it is. He was my number two pick, I think.
Well, listen, the Wolf could play, but Scott, when pressed, I did go back once and calculate about a decade ago. I calculated based on what is available visually in that final game, his stat line, and it at minimum is a triple-double.
Exactly.
I mean, he does everything. Exactly. I mean, his teammates are not good. He's got some lousy, lousy teammates, you know?
I compared him to D. Rose, MVP D. Rose, somebody that can jump off the bench,
right,
jump out of the gym, and get you an MVP season.
Yeah. He also did the extra move when the game was on the line against the Dragons right at the end. Mm-hmm. He's like, and the referees, they don't even know what to do with Teen Wolf. They just let him do whatever he wants. He goes and stands right under the basket. Yeah. Like, what? You're not allowed to do. Well, don't get in his way. Get angry. Just let him do whatever he wants to do. So All American is the show on CW, and you have a hand in writing the each episode. Are you in the room? What's the process with that?
Yeah, so I have my hands on, you know, every episode. I'm helping produce it as well. But for me, I gave them complete freedom to take the story wherever they wanted to go. The initial bones of the story is based off of my life. But in terms of telling my true life story, I can't recreate those memories and throw them on TV. So I'm in the writer's room helping out as much as I can a few times a week. And in terms of producing, just, you know, getting people attached to the show. And I'm actually a assistant coach. I like myself to be the defensive coordinator of Beverly High School. So when you're watching Tay Diggs on the sideline, I'm kind of like waiting in the shadows in his blind spot. So you'll notice me by the beard. My beard's a lot longer than. But, yeah, it's just been a great process coming from just this idea that me and my producing partner, Dane Mork, had my last 2 years playing in the league, we were developing the show. So there are times where, you know, I'm saying this out loud now, I would lie to my linebacker coaches and say, oh, I have to go use the bathroom, coach. And I'm literally in the bathroom giving story notes to our showrunner saying, hey, Spencer can score this touchdown.
No way, that's great.
Oh, make him spin right here and go right there and then come back 10 minutes later like, I think I had milk, coach. I'm sorry. So I'm openly saying that to the NFL right now. I'm sorry, but I think something good came out of it.
I think Spencer has a weak constitution. I don't know if he's going to make it. Yeah. Now another giant who we like to talk to, Sean O'Hara, he was on that first Super Bowl team.
Yes.
And he once infamously, he also pretended he had to go to the bathroom, and he went into the third stall at halftime of a game and had a trainer bring him a wiener with the mustard packet. And he ate that. He ate that at the game.
The things you do to succeed.
Did you ever eat during a game?
I don't think, only when I was injured. Only when I was injured.
Okay, well, that's fine.
That's all I did. That's all I did.
I mean, what a fascinating, legitimately fascinating thing to go from the NFL, a dream for countless people out there, and then you're making pages now in Hollywood. What a crazy life.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, it all started off just writing my own little short stories. You know, I was somebody that every off day, which is in the NFL for most teams, it's Tuesday. So I'd always, you know, make dinner, grab dinner, and then see a movie. It didn't matter what the topic was, how long it ran, how far away it was from where I lived. There was a time when the movie Moonlight came out, it was playing, I want to say, about 30 miles away when I lived in South Florida. And I said, let's do it. And that was always my therapy in the league, is going and sitting in a dark theater for 2 or 3 hours and not thinking about football. That was the best rehab I ever had in the league, to the point where I thought I can kind of recreate some of these stories in my own likeness. So those nights when we're flying back after games, you know, guys are hanging out and, you know, playing around, talking about the game, reviewing film, I have my iPad open and I'm like writing little stories, and, you know, guys like Kiko Alonso and Jelani Jenkins are coming over wanting to watch film. I'm like, man, get that away from me. I'm done with the game. We'll talk about it tomorrow. Like, I'm writing a story about my childhood right now. So just
that really is. I mean, I don't know. I don't want to say unique, which would make you one of a kind, but certainly distinctive. I don't know too many pro athletes who are doing fiction or, you know, some level of pseudo fiction, putting stuff down on the page. page like that? Or so are you then self-taught? Did you at some point get, I mean, you know, I'm sure half the population of Los Angeles has a script writing book or a storytelling book to get them going with that? Or did it just come to you naturally?
Yeah, I would say somewhat self-taught. Mm. I just watched a lot of movies, watched a lot of TV shows, read a lot of books about it. And then, you know, once All-American became a thing, just, you know, standing right beside our showrunners and being in the writer's room and picking up those stories. Guys like Greg Berlanti, who's, you know, probably the biggest TV producer in Hollywood right now, when I want to say 15 shows on the air, you know, when he comes into the writer's room, I'm sitting right next to him because I want to learn how he sees stories.
That's how you do it.
There's still a lot more for me to learn. I've been looking into classes at USC, looking into classes, extension classes at UCLA. But by no means do I think I'm the best right now, but I just want to get into a point where I can tell stories unique to me and give people the opportunity to tell their own stories.
Sounds like you already have, it comes to you fairly naturally that the hardest trick of all. A lot of people want to be writers. A lot of people want to be in the entertainment industry, but it's remarkable how many of those people announce their big plans, but they don't do the actual thing of writing all the time. That's what that's kind of the trick. You got to write all the time. That's how you get good at it. It's like flexing you want a big bicep and pick up that weight over and over again.
And I mean, I look back at some of that earlier stuff that I wrote, and it's god awful. It's terrible. Punctuations are all out of whack and sentences are fragmented and stuff, but it's, you know, it's trial and error. You have you have to do it. You have to flex that muscle, like you just said. It's, you have to do it. And the people that talk about it, they, you know, they don't essentially do it.
That's basically it's it's fun to talk about. Yeah. It'd be cool if it worked out, but like it's like anything else. You gotta repetition, repetition. All right, let's see what you know, not know about movies, but what you where you come down on some movies here. Start off with perhaps the most popular movie based question known to man: best James Bond.
Best James Bond. I was just telling Black Tie over there, I need to revisit the retro ones. So I just got a brand new TV, and now I'm hell bent on watching all the classics. Mm. But for me, coming up, my favorite one is Skyfall for right now. Ooh. For right now, and okay. I know there's a treasure trove of Bond movies out there, and I will get to them. I've seen a handful of them, but coming up, especially when I was in that world of learning how to write and visually taking in everything, Skyfall was beautiful to me.
It's crazy because as you go back into those, and you're much younger than I am, but it is a trip that even movies that did really well, big summer blockbusters were expensive to make in that period.
Yeah.
They look like such campy junk, almost all of them. I mean, it's crazy how much versus even the worst movie that comes out in the 21st century is super slick looking.
Yeah.
It's a weird thing to adjust your eye and to be able to look past, like, that's the best they could do in terms of special effects or makeup or whatever. You got to look past all that and see, like, Sean Connery.
Yeah.
I loved Roger Moore.
Uh-huh.
And Pierce Brosnan was cool, but Connery and Daniel Craig are kind of, about as opposite in terms of representing the characters you can get. Connery's cool, but you will be thrown by how campy they are.
I know Connery's up there, and even though I haven't seen all of them, I know he is the platform when it comes to it. Now, when you get to Pierce Brosnan, ironically, he looked like my old giant special teams coach.
Really?
Yeah, so when he would get mad at us, I'm like, oh, this is Pierce Brosnan yelling at us. This is amazing. But what was the one with Halle Berry? Was it Die Another Day?
I think that was the one that was really bad that made them say, we better get off this nonsense and go a little grittier with the reality here. It was the invisible hotel, the ice hotel and the invisible car.
But
what that one was called.
It was a terribly beautiful movie. Even that era, the Pierce Brosnan era, was just so over the top. But what came from that is one of the greatest arcade game. I mean, video
GoldenEye,
games.
Right?
GoldenEye is one of the greatest games ever played.
See, so that's what I missed that whole thing.
Just off the strength of the video game, puts Pierce Brosnan probably at top three or four. Just off the video game.
All right, I got you on that. best Batman, not best movie. Best guy to play Batman. Your favorite Batman.
Oh man,
got Bale, got Adam West.
This takes me back to the neighbors scene. Where he's like, I'm Batman. No, I'm Batman. But I would say specifically, Oh man, who's Birdman and Spider-Man in Spider-Man
Homecoming. Oh, Michael Keaton.
Michael Keaton was one of he was my favorite growing up. That and he was just my favorite. I actually hope they come back with a very old Batman and recast him in it.
I'd be down for that because Michael Keaton, while he doesn't, because that when he makes that one, it's just before they get into the thing of like, well, if you're going to be a superhero, you better go out and get jacked. You better like spend the next 6 month actor just getting super jacked up. Like he was not at all, but that's kind of the spirit of actual Batman. Yeah. It's like he's just super rich and he's got a darkness to him, and Michael Keaton can raise an eyebrow and affect that vibe as well as anybody can.
And my baseline for Batman, picking Batman, is the chin. You have to have a good jawline and chin. So when Robert Pattinson tapped on to play, I went, I see it. He has the chin. It's so almost true. A right angle. So I'm all for Robert Pattinson to play the new Batman, because obviously they're going with a younger feel for it. Bale was always good to me, but that last one, that voice just kind of took me out of it. He just kept going into the depths of like his baritone. Blah, 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 blah. I didn't understand why he just kept going deeper.
Such a weird decision by the director to do that, because it's so distract. I get it that you want the reality to be that, well, then no one would recognize him. Yeah. But like, all right, we live in a world in which if you have, it's all about something that happens in Russia or the Soviet Union. We just now accept, they're all English instead. Based on that standard, you could have just had him talk normally, and it wouldn't have been such a ridiculous sound. You're like, I'm Batman. I don't know who you are.
I always like the fact too that like they don't talk enough about how Batman is really into arts and crafts, because when you think about it, especially in that last one, Dark Knight Rises, when they're walking out onto the ice, and that's essentially like their deathbed, like Batman throws him a lighter and says, light it. And all of a sudden you see the bat signal on the side of the bridge. I'm like, Batman, when did you have time to do this?
It's a good
question. Had to have taken like 2 or 3 hours to do. You could have been saving people at this point. But no,
but you gotta allow him his passions. Yeah. And he loves his crafting.
He loves crafting. He went to Michael's. There was no line, and he got it. He got his arts and crafts, got his yarn, got his oil and everything, his gas. And
it's an interesting note, because you're right about that he probably did say, like, this is terrible what's happening to Gotham right now. Yeah. Everyone is gripped with fear right now. But those are distracting everybody from their crafting, ergo, I'm going to have my run of Michaels.
It's like, should I save people right now, or should I run to Michaels?
They'll wait. Yeah, they'll be all right. They'll wait a couple hours.
I mean, they're not dying right now. We're good.
No, I got some things to do.
Shaq, real quick, you just did your Bane impression, by the way. Shout out to that. That's been a while.
It's pretty good Bane impression.
That was not the time for it. I was wondering what would break first, your spirit or your body.
We once did a Bane impression off. I'm hoping those tapes are lost. That was not
I don't know.
Good.
Well, you want to do yours?
Nothing's ever lost.
But speaking of Batman, I do think the best sort of hand-to-hand fight scene in a superhero movie was Bane versus Batman round one in Dark Knight Rises.
Yes.
Batman got his ass whooped.
Yes.
Yeah.
But what a fight scene that was.
That is awesome, and I think Bane is an awesome bad guy. I'm trying to think. What throws me, did you enjoy Endgame?
I did.
I don't like when movies... You cried?
I cried.
About what?
No slander is allowed here, Shaq.
About what? Were you weeping?
As a father of a 2-year-old and one on the way, Endgame was a dad flick.
Okay.
There were Tony weeping because, you know, he lost Tom Holland, Spider-Man, Paul Rudd coming back and seeing his daughter age, 5 or 6 years.
Yep. Yeah, that's
there
nice.
Are moments. There are moments in there where Endgame is absolutely a dad flick.
Yep. All right. Make a note of that, Spaghetti.
Hey.
Spoiler wept watching Avengers. Did you weep, Spaghetti?
The second time around, you realize it's very emotional.
I stopped after four. I might go back for a few.
You've seen it 4 times?
That's nothing.
I've seen it 6 times, and I'm going back for a 7th.
What?
Yes.
Within Film Study Podcast, that room has seen it collectively, I want to say, 15 to 20 times collectively.
Yep.
Sheesh.
And 4 is on the lighter side.
I've got to see it again, and I fully intend to. I liked it. I thought it was really good. I don't.
You didn't like Thanos as a villain? I thought he was probably one of the better villains.
He was great. No, I did think he was great. The thing that trips me up is, because you can't, it's really hard to maintain, and they did a decent job of it, relatively speaking, for superhero movies, is the when you start getting into the intergalactic stuff and the mystical powers and everything, it's really hard to then also have... What's his name? Hawkeye?
Yeah.
The Arrow Man?
Yeah.
Yep.
It's like, all right, Black Widow. It's like, you have no role here. Please.
No, make scram. No mistake.
The JV practice is over, guys. Clear out here. We this is a real game here now.
They should have been out the paint movies ago.
Yes.
We are here with that. But the fact that they're there, it's like, okay, one of you guys has to die. You know, for the three people probably in the world that haven't seen it, just watch.
No, we're allowed to talk about it.
Just watch the movie. But...
It's also the thing that's hard to balance is, and like I say, they did a good job, is the consistency of how powerful somebody is.
Yes.
Superman, are you made of steel and impervious to anything unless there's kryptonite around?
Yeah.
If kryptonite is your, okay, I get it. That's your kryptonite is kryptonite. Okay. But if in absence of that, the story you've told us is that you cannot be hurt.
Yes.
So then how come sometimes when someone big enough comes along and slugs you, like he'll sometimes go like, he'll do that thing like where he's like, oh, that my jaw a little bit.
You
like,
got me.
What do you mean? How are you hurt now? You're Superman. You can't get hurt. That's the whole point.
Even just the idea that Batman can stand eye to eye to Superman is insane to me.
Yeah.
Batman's just a regular guy that's super rich. Now, being rich somewhat is a superpower, but Superman, you can tear into him with literally your eye beams. Like, just do that, get him out the paint, and be the superhero.
There is no way. Yes, that fight would last for 4 seconds tops in real life.
Exactly.
If you could take those fictional powers and bring them into the actual real world, that is the most ridiculous premise I've ever heard of. Short again.
Yes.
Of having kryptonite.
Yes. And if I'm Superman, I'm saying, listen, world, if you want me to be your, you know, your beacon of hope, round up all the kryptonite in the world and get it out of here.
That's right.
Get it out of here, and then I'm the best man for you. But if you have it percolating around...
The Earth loses its deterrent.
What
deterrent when you have Superman?
What? I mean, how cynical...
I mean, I'm not defending the plot.
What kind of skeptic? The vapid cynicism.
Right now.
You I'm see not... the vapid cynicism of the 21st century? Black tie personifies it.
I don't know how you hire
like,
this guy.
I don't know. I'm not sure about this Superman. Like, all he's done is help people. All he does is help people survive.
Exactly.
Scourge after scourge. Superman is the big savior. Like, I don't know. We better have a check on him, though. What?
Checks and balances, man.
Well, there was that new movie that just came out, Brightburn, which is about the reverse of Superman.
Yeah.
So it's like if he comes down to Earth as a child and he's bad. And I think that's what he's getting.
Yeah,
really?
Exactly.
Yeah, and we're getting that into that good. We're James getting into Gunn that world of showing what happens if superheroes turn bad. I know shout out to Seth Rogen. He's somebody that I've never officially met him. I have a funny Seth Rogen story, but I like the way he tells stories. And he's coming out with a TV show called The Boys that is where the superheroes are kind of. So it's another set of anti-heroes, like keeping them in balance so they don't ransack the city just because they can.
Oh, I love it. Yeah. That's going to be a good one. Using your powers for evil or for selfish purposes.
Yeah.
Love it.
Maybe not your Seth Rogen story, but why don't you tell your Tom Hanks story?
Oh, I have a funny time. Well, apparently I don't think it's that funny, but in the moment it was hilarious. So me and my wife are at Madison Square Garden watching the Rangers game. I think it's the playoffs, and that's where obviously a lot of people are there. So
Wasn't this year.
It was, I'm dating
right,
myself.
Right, spaghetti?
We're coming, though.
Wasn't the last few years, you know?
Capo Caco, we got him. We're going to be really good next year.
Listen, I like the guy's name, Capo Caco. Oh, my goodness.
So, you know, halftime, intermission and whatnot, we go up to the owner's suite. That's where you eat, you know, relax a little bit before going back down to the game. So I get into the elevator, and I think I'm the last person in the elevator. The elevator's pretty much full. All of a sudden, a hand blocks the door and opens the doorway open. Tom Hanks walks up to me face to face, and I feel like he saw it was crowded. It was like, I'm going to mess with this guy a little bit. So he literally walks up face to face. I'm talking 3 inches from my face, and I'm like, oh, my God, this is Tom Hanks. Let me look everywhere else, but I don't want to stare down Tom Hanks. This isn't that. So doors closed, probably like 5 or 10 seconds later, he goes, this is probably very awkward for you. And I'm like, oh, yeah, you know, yeah, because I'm Tom Hanks. And I'm like, okay. Yeah, yeah, it's very awkward. It's very
That's
awkward.
The best.
But he started laughing. It was just a funny moment. He probably does not even remember this, but the whole elevator laugh.
Well, you hear stories like that about Bill Murray too. Yeah. I would that's using your powers for mischief, and I enjoy it.
I loved it. I was like, I have my Tom Hanks story for the rest of my life, and I'll be telling that to my kids and my grandkids.
When he retires, that's exactly what Tom Brady should spend the rest of his days doing. Just going around messing with people. Like, well, hey, can I, you know, and then the opposite of that is that Cam Newton, some guy wouldn't give him his seat for $1,500. I was thinking about that, actually.
On an airplane.
On an airplane, yeah. Where was he? In Europe?
He was flying like France. It was like a 10-hour flight to France or somewhere. But I know it was 10 hours.
I was thinking about that. And, of course, everybody says, who would turn down $1,500 to do that? I mean, I guess if you're super rich, you might ask for more. I think that I am mischievous. It's not mischievous. I'm loyal enough to my teams that if I think that if it was like, if it was the week of a Steelers playoff game, and it was Tom Brady, and they were playing the Patriots, and it was Tom Brady, like, hey, can I get your seat for whatever? I'd be like, no, you cannot.
Listen, I will sit in the
bathroom. Because I'd be a hero.
I will sit in the bathroom for $1,500. I'm totally fine with that. As long as I get proper hydration and a bag of pretzels, I will sit in the bathroom for $1,500. And being a pseudo rival, if it did come to that point, I would just nag him the entire flight after we switched seats.
I see. You want me to go quiet. You don't want the trash talk. That's going to cost you an extra $500.
I'll go sit back down for another $500.
And
how about that?
I'm going to take out this stinky burrito from this bag unless I see another $500. That's when you got him over the barrel.
I would hands down take his money.
I love that.
Any day of the week.
That's a good let's say you aren't well. And the situation is dire physically.
Mm-hmm.
You have to go to the hospital. What TV or movie hospital are you going to? And doctor do you want to be treated by?
Ooh.
Could go to like ER with George Clooney.
I feel like
you could go to Grey's Anatomy.
I feel like it has to be Grey's Anatomy.
Now they're too busy.
Well, because I feel like they've literally seen every case that's ever happened.
That's a good point.
I'm actually waiting for like an alien to come in.
Everything has been through that hospital. You're right about it.
I'm waiting for aliens to come to say, hey, he has three hearts. We need to take out one of them and give it to like a little girl. So anything that I have, I'm sure they've seen it before.
I mean, solid point. See, I don't like the fact that I want them to be completely. See, fans want football players to be solely focused on football. It's football. It's okay. Yeah. You can have a life outside of that.
Yeah.
If you're going to be an ER doctor doing life-saving surgery, stop with all the sex and all the time on each other. We can't have that.
I'm like, just keep that out of my room. Just do it down the hall.
I don't want it in the hospital. Period.
Don't do the like close the door and then you like I'm sitting in the bed. I see you guys arguing right outside. Like, hey, move, go.
I feel like I'm not your chief priority here. Doctor and nurse, you know? Stop with putting yourselves on each other all the time, you know?
Who would be yours?
I don't want to ever be in a war or anything, but I really got to trust Hawkeye Pierce and company on Matt. Okay. I don't ever want to be in that situation, but talk about seeing it all.
Yeah.
What could I bring to them that they'd be like, oh, we can't fix that? They fixed it. They fixed all.
That's true. Would the tech be a little dated, though?
You've got all the answers.
Hey.
Saint Elsewhere. I know who I'd go to. You know who the doctor I want? Talk about seeing it all. The doctor who in the third-rate garbage, I don't even know if you'd call that an OR. It was just sort of like a room, is the doctor in Face Off.
Oh.
He took one guy's face off and put it on somebody else's, and they both survived.
What is that? A 90s action movie.
Aha!
I have seen Face Off.
You damn right you have.
I have seen Face Off. But you guys are missing, like, the obviously bearing the lead here. You go to the Citadel, right? Go to Grand Maester. Maybe go to Qyburn. Maybe.
Yeah.
No?
I guess he did. You know what? He did resurrect.
He did.
I mean, is that a quality of life that you would want?
That's debatable.
He didn't fix Jamie's hand, one. And two, what's his name? The Mountain, who he did. Like, that's a terrible life. You're all blue. No one would ever want you around. Everybody would be like, oh, gee. Try to make conversation with the Mountain.
I go back to technology. Was the technology on point back then?
Fair enough.
You know,
I mean, he could walk technically, but is that living or is that mere survival? I think we know the answer to that. What if you could have any house in a movie? You could live in any house in a movie or TV show.
Any house.
I wrote down a few.
I got it.
The Brady Bunch house. My favorite apartment in any movie or TV show. Three men and a baby. You ever see that picture?
Yeah.
That is some apartment they live in.
I have two.
Go ahead.
And I've thought about this before. The first, Tom Hanks' apartment in Big.
Oh, yes. Great answer.
There's just space to roam. There's a basketball court. You have a trampoline. Like, you just have space to do
things. You get it furnished, right. You get it furnished. It's not, they're not taking the stuff out, right?
I would have Tom Hanks' Big, nice. Furnish it for me. Just be a kid again.
Yes.
The other one is...
With 2019 toys.
2019.
That's the update. Yeah.
VR, complete VR room.
Yeah, I don't want the 85 video games.
My second one, and this is... I'm digging into the archives right now, but growing up, I always thought Eddie Murphy's penthouse in the movie Boomerang was my standard for, bachelor, living in New York.
That's pretty good.
You know, being that, willing and dealing guy in the marketing world. To me, that was it. Actually, to the point where... I looked up that apartment when I played for the Giants. It's not an apartment. It's an event space now. And I wanted to just go, stand in and be like, this is where, this is where Marcus lived, essentially. But I think they were closed that day, and the next day they had an event, and it kind of just went out of my mind. But to this day, I still want to go to that event space.
That's a good one.
That's my thing.
I wrote down, I said apartment. Three men and a baby, but you know what? I might also choose the best apartment. The tough call is, would I rather live in Wayne Manor?
Mm.
The Christian Bale Wayne
Manor.
It's
kind of cold there, though.
Well, it looks neat, though. And the Michael Keaton Wayne Manor with that gigantic fireplace where he beds his ladies on a giant, on the skin of a beast.
Yeah.
You know, just like, well, I'm going to have you here. You know, I love that. But then also, the... apartment he lives in Dark Knight where Joker and his gang comes into. That's a pretty nice pad in New York City or Gotham or anywhere else on the big blue marble.
It's funny because growing up, you always, and forgive me if I'm the only one, but I always thought that I'd get to a point or successful enough to where I can build trap doors and hidden hallways and have hallways within hallways. So hopefully I'm still working to that point to where it becomes a normal thought in my mind to do that, but I would clearly take cues.
Well, that thing, maybe they did it for the movie where that safe place where he hits the door and they go in there and everything, but that actually was in somebody's apartment, so that thing's left behind. That would be a great fringe benefit. You can shoot the movie here as long as I get to keep that hide space.
Yeah, just keep, I don't care if it's fake, just keep it there.
Forrest Gump's big house down there.
Oh,
the Silver Spoons place, pretty good.
Yeah.
Black Tie, your thoughts?
Let's say literally any one of Iron Man's houses.
Oh, you stole my pick.
Anyone.
You stole my pick.
I know you were thinking it. I'm glad I stole it from
you. On brand and go with the movie that's super recent and go with, actually, I'm going to go with The Cabin from Endgame, which apparently now is on rent. An Airbnb. You can actually rent it out.
Yes.
It's a nice little home, nice property.
Why would you want all the houses in the history of movies? That's the place you would live?
The man solved time travel in that living room, in that kitchen, for crying out loud. Okay. Another house, obviously old school, Richie Rich. Did anyone ever watch Richie Rich back in the day?
Yes.
As a kid, that's like, oh, man.
Yes. Well, the houses in all the John Hughes movies in the outskirts of Chicago, those are all mansions. Those are all multi-million-dollar homes. They look perfectly middle class and everything else, but when you see them in person, you're like, oh, in the movies, it just seems like a regular house, but that's a crib. Spaghetti, any we missed there?
I'd take Tony Soprano's house with the ducks in the pool.
So modest.
With Carmella's awful decorating touch.
Yeah, with the gaudy Italian decorations, the same neighbors, the same, the red, what is it, the red Cadillac Escalade when it first came out. I want everything Tony has.
You wouldn't want a castle in Blank Check? I mean, for $1 million, he got a lot of stuff. I mean, why not?
I just think I'm used to that area, that neck of the woods, and it's close enough to
Manhattan. Yeah, that's a good part. That's a good detail, is that the house has to be where it actually is, in the movie. Sure. You can't, move it. Yeah, I'm going to put it on the edge of the Pacific. I'm going to in Laguna. No, if it's in Smallville in Superman, you live in Smallville.
I'm going to put this cabin in Studio City. We're good.
What else? What? Okay. Your neighborhood suddenly takes a real rugged turn, you know, and it's like, wow, there are bad elements all around us. What police station do you hope is in the neighborhood? Ooh.
What police station is it? Is this the best?
You get the force
rendering of the police station.
Yeah, you get like you get the force. You get the wire guys.
No,
you could get
which, by the way, in the siege, two wire alum are in there. So you got
is that right?
Yes, so you have Avon Boxdale who plays a bit role, and also Lieutenant Daniels is also Denzel's like right hand man in the siege.
What police?
You could have the NYPD blue guys. You could have the Hill Street Blues people. Jump
you
Street.
You know what? I'm going with New York Undercover.
Oh, are you?
I'm going with
New York. I mean, they take it seriously.
They take it seriously. Half of them look like me. I can have conversations with them. I'm going with that. And for some reason, they like the same music as me. They have some of the best like music cameos at the end of every episode.
And
so I just go to whatever bar they hit it. Whatever their cop bar is, I want that.
And they also, and the other thing is too, they don't somehow, even though it's got a gritty, real feel to it.
Yeah.
They also apparently are not beholden to giving people lawyers.
Yeah.
No one. Every episode pivots on the person not asking for a lawyer, and they just sweat him until he starts crying. And they're fine. I know. Like, is that legal in America to do that to everybody like that? No one knows that they should just ask for a lawyer if they had a hand in a dark crime.
They get the job done.
What about the Adventure Bay crew, the Paw Patrol guy, Ryder and his dogs?
I haven't seen Adventure Bay.
You haven't seen the pups on Paw Patrol?
No.
Really?
I don't want dogs patrolling my streets.
That's
my wife's scared of dogs, so.
That's the right answer. Yeah. Well, how Adventure Bay got so sideways that dogs are the fail-safe between crime and...
like, we can trust them.
I don't know what they're thinking there. The Lethal Weapon cops. How about Pacino and company in Heat? I mean, that is not a crew you want to go up against.
No, because... I feel like they won't give you an inch. They'll give you a conversation, but they won't give you an inch.
No, charismatic, but at the end of the day, like you find yourself out in an airfield having a shootout, you're going to probably come up snake eyes.
And he doesn't sleep. I don't want an officer that doesn't sleep. Like, go get your 8 hours. I don't want those 12 bags underneath your eyes. I'm trying to catch my man. Like, no. Go. Go get a sleep number. Go do whatever. Get your sleep because you're better for the job.
What about Sonny Crockett and Tubbs?
Nah, I'm staying too with my busy undercover guys.
Yeah, I'm with you about that one. Last one go ahead. Oh, I'm sorry.
You doing more movies?
Oh,
yeah, go ahead.
Oh, no, please, sorry. I just want to jump in real quick. I got a couple. Russell Crowe's crew in American Gangster.
Okay.
Really dedicated to the cause.
Yeah.
You know, really good performance in there. And then this is the winner for me, Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Andy Samberg and his crew, they get the job done. Granted, a little slapstick, a little silly, but I'll be entertained while getting my queso.
I don't think you will be.
Yeah.
Because
I don't think laughing is going to be a part of your interest.
If something bad happened to you, you don't want hijinks while they're solving your case. You're like, no, give me what I want.
This is a lot of fun. I almost forgot that somebody burned my house.
Yeah.
Entertainment, guys.
Spaghetti?
I'd love to be like... saved somehow by McConaughey and Woody Harrelson from True Detective.
I mean, they're never going to let go of the crime.
No.
They will stay on that crime. The society moved on 20 years ago, but not those guys.
You're going to see them at Target like, oh, like, hey, buddy, how you doing? Like, I'm still thinking about that.
What's his name again?
Russ Cole.
Russ Cole. Burning those nails, drinking those warm pounders, man. Makes me want to smoke and start drinking warm pounders.
You close the case. You have all the... No, something doesn't feel right. We got to revisit. No, we don't. We're good. We're good. No, I have to do it. Like, no, stop.
Second season, if we ignore that, the third one, back on track.
Got it back on track.
It was wonderful, right? Yeah. It was really great.
Yeah.
What car would you want? This is going to be... You can really put your whole movie, TV thing into context. That's a good questionnaire. I give that to you. You could have all your guests fill out this questionnaire, and then you know where they come down.
Yeah, that's a good one. I mean, I'd be remiss if I don't say literally any Transformer.
Oof. I didn't think about it. I didn't even think about it.
That's a good one.
I mean, Optimus Prime,
they,
like...
Then you don't even need a police force.
Exactly. You know? Two for one. There we go.
Optimus Prime. Hey, we're gonna, first Optimus Prime, we're going to go to San Francisco for the weekend. And then, oh, somebody burned my house down. Get him, Optimus Prime. You know?
I will say, gone in 60 seconds, the Shelby GT. That's up there.
Black tie.
Spencer took my pick there. You know, I'm a big Transformers guy. Bumblebee, Sideswipe, all those fun dudes. Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift. Like, okay. That was the first time, like, drifting.
Tokyo Drift.
That was the first time, like, drifting was a big thing on screen. So yeah. I definitely would take a look at those guys.
I think
drifting in Los Angeles?
If we were ranking everybody's list, Black Tie is a distant fourth right now. Am I right? What do you want a car to drift for? What are you going to do with that?
I'm representing just the randoms in the audience. All right,
go ahead.
I'm doing.
Yes.
That's all I got.
I was going to take Dom Toretto's, black, I don't know what it is.
Is that a Torino?
Whatever the one that he just always is in.
Yeah.
But if that's taken, I would, the Lamborghini that Bruce Wayne has and that he uses to crash.
How do you not go Batmobile?
Lamborghini? You're in Bruce Wayne's house, in his garage, and you're going to take the Lamborghini instead of the Batmobile?
The one thing that can't change into anything.
The Batmobile. I'm sure the Lamborghini Bat-cycle is even cooler. The Bat-cycle, you can roll over and like, lands right
again,
back
I'm
up.
Being
it's, like
practical.
It's a weeble-wobble of motorcycles.
The Batmobile's not practical. I'm thinking of
what are you talking about? Practical? Who cares? You make your own rules when you got the Batmobile. And then when you want to leave, and you never have to park it. Or when you park it, you just leave it and then whoop, shell it over. And no, cops can't do anything about that.
There it is.
Back to the Future.
Do what you want, Spaghetti.
Back to the Future, and I get into mentioning it?
I was going to mention that. I was thinking about my third place would be Luke Skywalker's Land Cruiser, just because it hovers.
Yeah, that'd be
a conversation starter.
Yeah.
You know? Right. You know, I'm spoken for. Sorry, ladies. But, I mean, if I weren't, like, imagine you pull up in that thing. Like,
yeah.
What is that? Where are the wheels? Like, yeah. It hovers.
That's like Tony Stark parking the iron suit outside of whatever the bar was in Malibu. Right next to the motorcycle. It's like, oh, cool motorcycle. Like, let me put on my car and fly away.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I'd like to have the Knight Rider car just because I like to talk to people instead of being alone.
Yeah,
it'd just be nice to have some company. Yeah. He has his own, he has his own thoughts. But yeah, I'll take the DeLorean. Of course, I want to go. I can see a man's recorded history, and otherwise, sure, I'll go back and see some dinosaurs and all that.
Just don't get any almanacs, and we're good.
Yeah, exactly. Well, no, see, I
you would
don't think, but I would get the almanac. And I would make myself quite wealthy, and that would be the end of that. Okay, last one is we tackled this a year ago, but I'm curious for your thoughts here. Best party in a movie you wish you could attend.
Best party. I've been looking through this list.
I gave you a whole list. There's so many good options.
There are some that take me back to specific points of when I watched it. So, you know, you got to do American Pie 2, the house party. The house party that they rent out. It's the summer house party. Everything that happens to get them to that party. And then they have that moment where they cheers at different points in the house. Like, to me, that was for somebody in high school waiting to come back from college one day and have that moment with my friends. That's up there for me. Another one, another sort of a teeny bop one.
Mm-hmm.
Can't Hardly Wait.
That's such a popular one.
People love that one. That was this is the last time I get to shoot my shot with the girl of my dreams. Let's see if we can do it. That's because, and at that time, this is pre-social media. So you probably won't see half of these people ever again because life happens. So growing up, watching Can't Hardly Wait was like, man, I'm going to have this experience one day.
I like that. That's an interesting one. Black tie.
Not a party I want to be at, but definitely worth a mention. Because does it count as a party? I think it does. The Red Wedding. Definitely
want
to mention.
Yeah, I mean, do you understand what we're trying to do, Black? This reflects poorly on you, Spencer.
like
at some point, this like reflects on you.
I want to go to a party I can die at. No.
It depends on what side you're on. If you're on the Frey side, you're completely fine.
No. Don't worry, Dave and Spencer. I'm not one of the people who gets killed. I'm one of the people killing close hand-to-hand combat. What's wrong with you?
Again, not saying I wouldn't necessarily be at it, but it's worth a mention if we're talking about historic party scenes, receptions in movie and TV history?
This was the question was, where do you want to be? Oh, who wants to be in the space?
Where
who
do you
want to
be
there?
Okay.
Was the party lit,
well,
though,
here's
or
thing.
Was what happened
thing.
At the party
I will
lit.
Say, it did seem kind of fun.
I did want to be there.
Until.
Right, but then it takes a turn, so that takes it out of consideration.
I feel like I could have saved the day. As you guys mentioned, I'm big on scores, and as soon as I hear that Lannister song,
yeah.
Like Catelyn Stark noticed it, I would have told everyone, including Rob and all the direwolves, to get the running. Okay,
no.
Should have saved it.
Now would it?
I could have saved it.
I would actually also say this is the end, the Franco party. Just because
that's a good party.
That's one of those parties where like you turn left or right anywhere and you're going to see somebody. Oh, let me bump into Rihanna.
Where do you come down on the mask party in Eyes Wide Shut?
There was a point in my life where, like, I'm all for it.
Yeah.
I'm all for it. I'm a married man, happily married with two kids now, but young Bachelor Spencer, let's go.
You know what's weird about that? I saw that movie. It was on last month, and I watched it again. And I like it a little bit better than most people do. Mm-hmm. I just like the way Kubrick pictures look. But to what end? Like this, so this is a price everybody has to pay that there's some weird pseudo religious event that happens. And who are the guys that attend that?
Yeah.
When what's going on in the other rooms in the mansion are available to you? Like, no, I want to watch the old man walk around with his cane and bonk the floor and like, oh,
like what? Smoking.
You know
device.
What's happening everywhere else, right? You're smelling incense from this old mask man. What goes on with you? Spaghetti, your thoughts.
I've never seen the movie, but I know it. But it's like about some really dark stuff. I don't think we should go down that path.
No, what movie?
I think the best party far is Project X. But I've heard about that. I would get anxiety. Just too many things going on. So I would probably pick. I love the party Michael throws in Godfather 2 in Lake Tahoe.
Yeah,
okay.
That's a great really
party.
Nice.
Yeah.
Although the first Godfather is where like Frank Sinatra shows up. That'd be kind of cool if I could see him perform. But I would take
the Sinatra equivalent.
Yeah.
Those are two great calls. But you see how this goes, Black Tie? Those are parties you would want to be.
You want to have a good time. You don't have to worry about imminent death.
Been to Lake Tahoe before, wasn't it?
You might get stuck. Yeah, Black Tie and I did not have a great time.
I will say, and this is one of those other ones of just like being a teenager watching these movies, it's old school. But, you know, seeing three middle-aged men partying with college students, I'm like, this is weird. Great party.
Yeah.
But this is weird.
Snoop plays. That's good. I like the pool party and boogie nights. That seems like a good.
I feel like it
let
went
your
long
hair
too. That was a very long party as well.
Some
mileage out of that.
I would love to call me an old square, but the Gatsby party.
Yes,
I'd love to have to put on a tuxedo.
Yeah,
to go to a party. You know,
when do you ever get to
outside
put on a
by the sea, by the bay? I'm gonna go have a party and high end smart cocktails.
And get called old sport all the time. Like yeah. I would
wah,
love that.
Wah, wah, wah. I wouldn't be too nervous to dance for being called out for not being a good dancer. I'd be like, I'm better dancer than you guys. Hey, basta look here. I'll stick you right in the kisser. See.
See, that's back
when
they're like...
You're the cat's pajamas, see?
That's back when it, like, wasn't bad dancing. You can literally do whatever you want, and it was considered innovative. So, yeah. Anybody out there, if you see me walking down the street, call me old sport, and we'll be good friends.
You're the cat's pajamas, the bee's knees, and so on. The Dazed and Confused, the beer bust at night.
Yes.
That speaks to what you were talking about with Can't Hardly Wait. And the one that probably has the most euphoric vibe to it is, aside from Revenge of the Nerds, the Tri-Lambs and Omega Moose.
Yeah.
Although they get their feelings hurt, but then when the Moose show up and everything, but then, you know, then they take out the Wonder Joints and then the Thriller plays, and it seems like a pretty good shindig. But the one that's probably the most satisfying is the post-heist party in Goodfellas, in that dumpy bar. Imagine. We're all millionaires! Yeah. And you all, at the same time, you and your pals all just got rich, and it's your secret, you know? Like, no one else can know what we're so happy about, but we're all so happy, and you get together, we did it! That moment would be the great one.
That's their Super Bowl. They just won the Super Bowl.
That's precisely right.
That's it.
Just don't show up in too fancy a coat, man.
Don't. After being told not to.
Exactly.
Also, just because I'm an Oregon Duck, I have to say Animal House. Animal House was filmed at University of Oregon.
It was
filmed at University of Oregon. There are still buildings where it was filmed at. I actually took two classes in and shoot a handful of scenes there, but one of the frat houses has since, you know, been...
You're kidding. I always thought, because I knew it was based around Dartmouth, but mm-hmm. I didn't know it was shot in Oregon.
Yeah, it was shot at different parts of Oregon, but a lot of the school scenes were shot at University of Oregon.
Oh, what? Wait a second. Eddie Spaghetti just informed me in my ear there that I can't believe it. How long have we been talking here?
Let's play our favorite game. You want to guess?
Oh, yeah, our new game, Black Tie, and then we'll get to some of our old favorite games with Black Tie here. Yeah. One game I like to play that I am the worst at is I have no sense when I start blathering how long it takes, and I'm always I always underestimate. Like, I think we've been talking now for 49 minutes.
You're atrocious at this.
Really?
Yeah, it's an hour five.
An hour five.
Yeah. You're always off by a minute. I would have just said 50.
Minutes. I would have just prices right you and just said 50 minutes.
You
just
knew that we were past 49?
No.
The
no,
rule
no.
with Dave is whatever number he says, add 15 minutes yep. at least, and that's usually what okay. it is.
Pretty much my entire time producing here was trying to keep check to a 45 minute a type.
It's a podcast. Who says anything? How
so that's where he gets
go?
It from, because he does the same thing
type
for
45,
us.
Tight, got,
keep it tight. Keep it tight. I'm like, no, we're going over.
That's
if
right.
it's good,
then
listen.
If it's a delightful conversation, as I feel this one has been, then then it's just it's when people bellyache before they see the movie. There was a lot of bellyaching about Avengers Endgame. Like, it's 3 hours. Like, well, if it's good, isn't that good? Don't you want a good thing to last a little bit longer?
I had no problem with that. I actually went in dehydrated just yep. so there was no threat to use the bathroom before.
Water intake yeah. was very limited that mm-hmm. day.
I don't get when
all
people...
All six times.
I don't want a crummy movie to last 3.5 hours, but, you know, I have no beef with the Godfather pictures lasting a long time. Now Black Tie for the longtime members of the Czech Republic, would you please give us a little bit of some Black Tie magic here? Do you want to do an elimination chamber? Do you want to do a shout out? Spencer, this is a fun thing that Black Tie brought to me. And okay. he said, I'd like to start doing this on the show. I'd like to start giving the shout outs to people who deserve them but never get them.
Okay.
And what were some of the best ones you gave? He said people never give a shout out to the bathroom, the guy in the public bathroom who has all the mints and the mouthwashes yes. and yes. all that kind of stuff.
They out. Don't. They don't appreciate it. I tip them well, though.
And is that right?
The second time. The first time, no tip. Second time, you get a tip. I always come back a second.
That's nice. That makes you classy. You but, also, what did you say, seeing eye dogs once?
It's not just
you felt getting... they were underappreciated, so he gave dogs a shout out.
Yeah, I did.
But it's
not just getting tips or not getting tips. It's that you have to be in the bathroom while other people are in the bathroom.
It's disgusting.
Like, that's terrible. Like that, true. Dealing with all the noises and sounds and smells. Get out of here.
Air quality.
Yeah, we get it. We understand what happens in public toilets.
It was, you know, dogs that sniff the bombs. Yeah.
Oh, bomb sniffing dogs. Yeah, that's what it was. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. You got to give them a shout out. That's a tough job.
Now let's do a caveat to this. Who's a character in a movie that didn't
go.
Get shout-outs that you would give a shout-out to, or an entity or a company?
I gave a shout-out to the doctor who did the face swap. Unsung yep. hero yep. of that
I got,
movie.
I got one, but I'm going to let you go
no,
first.
No, see, it's not a movie.
By
but...
the way, that doctor gets killed after he does Nick Cage kills
yeah,
him.
Yeah.
So who does the face swap with Travolta at the end of the movie? And here's something else that I can't talk about face-off without mentioning. It's absurd. It's outrageous ending. Joan Allen is the mm-hmm. wife, mm-hmm. and we know in hindsight, and we can let her off the hook, that she didn't know that Travolta, that Nick Cage had taken the body of John Travolta.
I think I know where you're going with this.
Now, listen, it's a little suspect that this is your longtime lover, mm-hmm. your soulmate. You don't notice any differences in anything when you
anywhere?
Share the bed with him?
Yeah.
There's no sense of that. Okay, I'll buy the logic of the movie. The movie makers laid out that they're going to swap faces and characters can't question it. Okay, yeah. I'm in. I get it. It's a fun idea for a picture. But after that, Nick Cage gets killed. Travolta comes within an inch of his life of getting killed himself. Mm-hmm. He goes through. He puts on the bad guy's face, and then he kills the bad guy. Then he puts his face back on, and they didn't have the same doctor to do it, mm-hmm. so I don't know who was able to figure it out, but they did figure it out. And after he heals all up, he comes back home after being in the hospital and, you know, and risking his life. And Joan Allen's sitting there on her laptop when he comes home, like, you couldn't come pick me up at the hospital?
Like, oh, hey.
Oh, today? I thought it was tomorrow. I thought it was next Tuesday. You couldn't pick him up at the hospital?
Yeah.
What kind of thing is that? After what you did? After what you did with Cage?
I never thought about that. I did used to think about how just the body is just different
that.
In general. The hairline, the box hair, like John Travolta has one of the biggest heads in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. Shout out to John Travolta. But it's just the face. The face changed, but nothing else did.
There's more to the equation than
it's
that.
Kinda, it's kind of...
We have a mostly adult audience. You know, I think they understand what we're getting at. That's weird, but I don't think you go on as a couple. You're like, do you understand what I've been doing for the last 6 weeks? Do you understand that the bad guy almost K-stabbed me and he shot me and I've been laid up in the hospital and you're playing on your laptop?
I wonder if he takes out a cigarette, which he said, like, stop smoking in the house, because remember, he stopped smoking for the family.
That's right.
So if he's like, you know what? I've had a day.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm going outside to the patio and I'm going to smoke a cigarette.
Oh, well, the other thing he does, it's a misdemeanor compared to not being picked up at the thing, but how he gets her back is the child of their evil, the diabolical evil guy who took their own child, as an afterthought, like he walks in the door and he's like, oh, by the way, hey, can this kid live with us? Like, well, now what do you want me to say? Yeah. Like, you brought a 7-year-old child into our home. Well, I'm going to kick him out the door now? Now we're stuck with this kid. Why would you bring a kid? Our daughter's like 16 or 17. She's almost out of the house. Yeah. Like, well, guess what? After what you did with Cage, I don't want to be with you that much anyway. And now we got a 7-year-old. She's like, what? Now we got to raise a child all over again?
Yeah.
You know?
I love it. I love it. I will give a shout out too, and you will love this one, is, you know, the wrecking crew and the construction crews of the Marvel Universe. They have some work to do.
They really do. What a mess.
Entire cities. And I actually think there'll be a really funny parody show, a short or whatever, about the construction crews of the Marvel Universe.
That is a really
just
funny
cleaning
idea.
Up like spider webs. Like, how do I get this?
Yeah.
Get it off.
Look
of
at
me.
This mess. Right. Exactly. Like,
is this a bomb? Somebody get this.
But to that point, my new
I
show,
don't think you're going to beat that, but go ahead. Well, no, try your best.
It's on the same line of that. Our actual show producer, Matt Perret, he's a former baseball player. He used to play in the Giants organization. He actually left baseball to go work on Captain Marvel and Ant-Man and the Wasp. So he's worked in a few Marvel movies as part of Second Unit.
Yep.
It was a PA on Second Unit. And what he essentially did was just take orders from Brie Larson and Paul Rudd. And it was not a great job, but more so, the reason I'm giving a shout-out to him and other second unit PAs is they know all the secrets and spoilers, but they can't say anything for years. Anything. Hmm. So not only
how
are
do they
you
keep
spoiled,
that shut down, that locked up?
Lawsuit it's insane. Will keep you quiet.
Exactly. Like, it's like Beyonce NDA, right? Like, you can't say nothing. But not only are you spoiled before seeing the movie, you also can't even go tell your buddies, like, oh, here's what happens.
Yeah.
So,
the world didn't collapse from it, but it is weird that did get out with Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. Everybody knew Bran was going to do it based on, like, UK books and stuff basically saying, oh, the odds are on Bran to win it. And it's like, well, that, I mean, it would make no logical sense just if you're a viewer, like, they're going to make that guy. By the way, how about that? How about that ending to say, no one's had a more interesting life. By the way, Peter Dinklage, for all the praise he gets, that English accent got a little loose in the last season or two. Like, what are we doing here? It's not like, what are you doing, Dinklage? That's not really an accent. But anyhow.
A fun accent bit from Game of Thrones. Go back and watch season one and Lord Peter Baelish, his accent from season one versus like season 6 and 5, completely different.
Is that
entirely
right?
Entirely different. Yes. He just speaks differently.
Last thing, Spencer, I want you to know about, so you know who your colleagues are. Do you know that Black Tie and I once had a conversation about. I always get it wrong, so I want you to get it right. Yes. I want him to know what you believe.
Please.
About yourself. Talk about thinking you have magic powers or superpowers.
I know where this is going.
Black Tie once declared.
No.
Let's dive into this.
Just so you know, it's a lie.
Black Tie said.
It's a lie.
Black Tie, we were talking about, like, Austin Rivers. He's like, Austin Rivers is better than you think he is. And I'm like, I don't think anything bad about Austin Rivers. I think it's weird that his father traded for him. And that creates weird locker room stuff. Like, why are you putting Austin in the game, Doc? I'm better than he is. And Black Tie said, like, why? Do you think, like, could I beat him at one-on-one or anything? Like, say, no, I couldn't beat Austin Rivers at one-on-one. Then we started throwing ones at him. He thinks he could beat Mario Chalmers.
No.
He thought, this is 5 years ago. Mario
still,
Chalmers.
Today, he could still beat you.
Oh, I mean, in 30 years, he could still. But what? One guy played in the NBA. No. The other guy's Black Tie. What do you mean? Mario Chalmers, the starting point guard of, at that time, the world champion, or maybe just off of their championship run, with the Miami Heat. Black Tie would beat him at one-on-one.
See, I did not say that.
See, that's
I said I could get a bucket. I said I could get a bucket.
No.
I said I could trust
myself.
What?
Guess what? You couldn't get a bucket either, right?
I don't believe that one bit. I believe you said it, but I don't believe that you'd win.
I'm
last person on the bench, the 15th man, 12th, whatever number it is,
you give him way
give
too
you
much.
40 points.
Buckets. Oh. I've played with international players and women professional players, and they do work. I 100% agree. Not even NBA-level players that they're monsters. But if you're telling me I want to play one-on-one in a game, I'm always going to say I can get a bucket. No matter what happens,
now,
I might
lose
11-1.
If they decided, if the caveat would be, if I was like, okay, I will, I'm going to put my car on this Mario Chalmers or whatever, right, or one of my kids on this. I would say, like, Chalmers, you can't let him get a bucket. You would not get a bucket. If he decided to have some fun and let you get a shot off, maybe it would dumb luck it would drop in.
I'm a good
jab. If you don't think Mario Chalmers could shut you down and just take the ball as soon as you tried to put it down once, you try to dribble it, Chalmers would swipe it. You try to shoot it, he would put it right back in your face. There would be no recourse for you against an NBA player.
A broken clock is right twice a day.
That's exactly right.
So when you're talking about a shot, are you saying I have a specific move? I'm going to do a Mario, I'm going to do a step back and swish, or are you like, I'm gonna just get it up there? Oh wait, it went in. That counts.
I got
as a shot.
A jab step and a little side
a
step.
He's insane.
Are you James Harden now? What are you doing? You doing like the double step back? Get out of here! Get out of here!
See, we talk movies the entire time on this podcast as we do on film study. We traffic in on unrealistic stuff. Forgive me for believing that. Yes, if I went up against Mario Chalmers, I can get one bucket. I'm sorry. I'm always gonna believe that. Might be false.
Hey,
probably is false.
Confidence is half the battle.
Irrational.
But you're wrong.
I mean, it's nice to believe in oneself, but I mean, sometimes it goes too far. You know what I'm saying, Spaghetti?
Delusions of grandeur right there.
What do you think of that? Who's right?
I agree with you. The NBA player would not let it happen. Like, I've seen college guys. No. I'm like, oh, that's insane.
I mean, it. All
right. Listen, I know a couple 15-year-olds right now that can give you buckets.
That is true.
Really want to get it.
That's the truth. We see Bronny all the time on IG, and like he's looking like a monster
exactly.
right now.
I'd love to see that. I'd love to see you against LeBron's kid. And so if you could get a bucket off
my
of him, I would be surprised. I would be. What is he, 17 now?
No, he's like 15.
All right.
Yeah,
maybe.
14,
maybe
15. Yo,
still, my money's on the other guy.
I mean, come on.
And then
I'm also like 4 years older.
He's got the Bernard King game. he's got that old man game too. He's got no quicks to get you. That's all he'll do. You could back this pot belly guy down. Like that does not equal you backing down Mario Chalmers.
Yeah.
He's gonna be way more than you. He's gonna be way stronger than you.
And he probably still plays basketball to this day.
It's funny, right?
This was five years ago. This is an NBA starting point guard. He's gonna get buckets off of him.
So Spencer, here's what happened. Ike Taylor, who I could tell didn't really play hoops because of how he shot. I was like, oh yeah, I can take Ike. And then we tested out that theory, and it did not work out. Because
exactly.
He was still a lockdown corner. And it's like, when he puts those hands on you.
No, he was retired when you did that. I took him to the free throw line when he was an active player, and I shamed him. And I didn't feel good about doing it. But I wanted to raise his competitive spirit.
Yeah.
I wanted to get his – he had a bad season.
Mm-hmm.
And so to help boost his confidence, I said, here's a good place to start. You know, training wheel style. Let's go. We'll do some free throws. You beat me. You'll feel better about yourself. I wore an AJ Green jersey.
Oh, God.
I couldn't miss. I didn't want them to go in, but I have dignity, you know?
See, for me,
I just dropped them all. I watched them. I watched it happen, and I shattered his confidence in his career. But then Black Tie played him one-on-one, and Ike's confidence was fully restored.
Just stick to horse, stick to pig, so they're not guarding you.
Yep.
Just
like I said, this was 5 years ago.
Can I tell you something else? Can I tell you one last thing? He couldn't beat me at horse. if it was horse uncontested, Black Tie would not.
So you got a shot. He's got a shot.
That's right.
You got a okay.
Lefty
okay.
Shoot it a little bit.
Yeah. We're lefty.
I'm a lucky lefty too.
Is that right?
Yep.
We got a lot in common. Yep. We love the movies. Make sure you check out Spencer and Black Tie's podcast again.
I had an Elimination Chamber.
Oh, geez, yeah. Louise, excuse
yeah.
me.
Yeah, you asked me for
look
it.
Look at how Black Tie. Look how Black Tie steps on the promo yeah. of the show. Go ahead.
He put me on the spot before the show, so I had to prep for this in like 20 minutes. Like, all right, go ahead. Classic DDFP. Do you want to see people up on what the Elimination Chamber is? I haven't done this in a while.
The Elimination Chamber, we used to make fun of it, but as it turns out, if you go on social media, it seems like everybody's doing that. You give four options, and then Black Tie says, choose one. And then it's like, well, am I choosing it because I like it or because I don't want it? And he's like, that's the game. Okay. It makes no sense. Okay. Makes no sense.
Well, actually, no. You guys just didn't follow the instructions. The initial rules of the Elimination Chamber is that you have to eliminate one, so the other three get to stay. But you got to get rid of one. You're not picking one. You're eliminating one.
All right. Well, you never really articulated that. So, I would say, like, am I eliminating three or am I eliminating one? But okay.
So stay on brand for, you know, movies like we talked all show. All right. This Elimination Chamber is based on the futures of a few young stars and celebrities. All right. We've talked about this recently in Film Study.
Oh, yes.
Tom Holland, Zion Williamson, Kyler Murray, and Game of Thrones' Kit Harington. Eliminate one based on their future star potential.
Hmm. I think that one's pretty easy for me. I mean, it's down to two.
It's pretty easy for at the same time.
I will say, yeah, ready? One, two, three. Kit Harington.
Yeah. Yeah.
No faith in Jon Snow being a movie star, eh?
I don't know. What's he gonna go?
He just
on
had
to
the
do?
Biggest TV show of all time.
No, he did?
The show was the biggest. He didn't have
He had like five lines in season 8, by the way. And
yeah, I don't know how much range he has. It's just queen. Like, just sort of like surprised kind of.
Monotone, just everything surprises him, like you said.
Maybe Tom Holland, but, you know, I guess.
Spencer thinks Zion has a brighter future than Tom Holland. I disagree. I think Tom Holland is Spider-Man for the next 10 years. He's a face of the
MCU. How many buckets could you get on Zion?
This is context now, because I said Tom Holland, the best thing he's going to do potentially is act, right?
Yeah.
So he's kind of already got to his ceiling, or at least approaching it. Zion is going to potentially be in the driver's seat of the NBA for the next 10 to 15 years, to where if he wants to act, a studio will create a script for him to act in. And who knows? He might be good. He's a very charismatic guy.
Boy, that's a great point, too.
He can be a boss in the NBA.
Sure.
He is a charismatic guy.
And transition over to acting. So he can just, to me, he can affect more industries.
Let me ask you guys this. The most realized versions of all those three guys I mentioned other than Kit Harington are, so you have Kyler Murray, let's call him Aaron Rodgers, right? Best case scenario. You have Zion, let's call him LeBron. And then you have, Tom Holland, let's call it Robert Downey Jr.
Mm-hmm.
Who's the biggest star of that trio? Rank them.
Zion. To me.
Well,
I don't
based on their most realized version. LeBron, Aaron Rodgers, and Robert Downey Jr.
I mean, you know, based on the nature of superstardom in the NBA versus the NFL, you're a bigger star if you're a star in the NBA, I think. Even though the NFL is the more popular sport, your individual star power, your juice to impact society. Although I'm trying to think of, like, Chris Long. If Tom Brady or Odell Beckham were doing what Chris Long has done in the last 5 years, would that be more impactful than what LeBron's done? LeBron's done remarkable things for society.
I mean, but basketball's turning into that global sport as well. So
yeah, also true, right?
Zion's coming in at the point where, you know, basketball in China, basketball in these areas that are just now starting to love and starting to come to the forefront of what basketball is overseas.
NFL is going to wind up in China and everything else. I don't know how they're going to figure out the travel issues with playing games, but I think it will achieve just about global appeal because the NFL wants that to happen, and it's going to be able to pull that off. But I reject the cynicism around Zion. Period. I don't understand. He's not tall enough. You know, that's. Do you watch the game in the last decade or so? Exactly. What you measure is not necessarily the impact. I mean, your literal height and the way Zion plays. Like, I don't. He's not like Karl Malone. He's not as tall as Karl Malone. Is like, yeah. Fortunately, he's not going to play the same game that Karl Malone was trying to play there. You know.
Yeah, it's. To me, he hasn't given you a reason not to bet on him.
He's 19. He's going the nonsense about, and then we'll wrap it up. But the nonsense that the story goes that hasn't exhibited much of a perimeter game. Better figure that out. It flummoxes me when people do that. How many examples do you need of a guy who was never required? Do you think Zion was ever, like, the third tallest guy on any of his teams growing up? There was no call for him to develop a perimeter game or much of one. Now that he is tasked with doing that, given his supreme athleticism, I suspect he'll be able to get in the gym and develop a perimeter.
Mind you,
as everybody else does.
He's getting paid handsomely to develop that shit.
As I always say, outside of Eric Snow and like Jason Williams, Vanilla Thunder or whatever his name,
White Chocolate.
How many guys in the NBA don't have a perimeter game at this point? They all do.
By the way, side note, your new coworker, Joe Thomas, host of Tomahawk Show, his nickname given to him by one Jeff Darlington, Vanilla Volcano.
Oh, yeah. I like that very
much. Dance
moves.
Adjective.
Well, listen, we're over the moon for you, Black Tie, with all your success outside of these
four
walls.
I'm just hitchhiking to these guys, man. Spencer, Joe, Hawk, all those guys.
It's a smart move. That's what I did. I hitch my wagon to more talented people. That's the way you get ahead, Spencer.
There you go.
But make sure you check out, like I say, on iTunes, look for the network WRTS. And there you shall find Film Study Podcast. I hope and trust that you now understand what Spencer at least knows about movies. And I guess he has a foil in Black Tie.
I'm the villain. That's my role.
He's the villain.
And also coming up in October on the CW, season number 2 of All American. Best wishes with that and everything else. Black Tie, continued success. Eddie Spaghetti, you're stuck with me for the time being.
Thank you for having me. This has been
great. We'll see what happens. Yeah, good times. Sorry for the 115 or whatever we did here. I don't know.
Blue by. We're good.
That's exactly. Yeah, see? All right, we'll be back with more Hooey and Applesauce for you later on. In the meantime, thanks so much, football fans. It's been a thin slice of heaven.